Hi everyone, welcome back to the Hero Podcast. My name is Mauricio Porras and I am the founder of Hero. Hero is an activism company creating the tools and technology people need to accelerate social and environmental change. Make sure to join the waiting list to gain early access to our products and platforms at heroactivism.com. In this episode, our guest is climate and social justice activist Jessica Kleszka, based in Wales in the UK. We talked about her first steps in activism, about the details of the police, crime, sentencing and courts bill in the UK, about how digital activism has helped to decentralize social movements and move more people towards action. Jessica also shared some key insights on how to accelerate social and environmental change and great advice on how to avoid burnout. So give it a listen and I hope you enjoy it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Hero Podcast. My guest today is Jessica Kleszka. Jessica, how are you? Such an honor to have you as a guest today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Of course. So, well, I'm very excited to learn more about your story, about your process on how you became an activist and everything that you're doing to fight for a better world for all. So maybe let's start by letting people know who you are and how would you describe yourself?
So I'm a climate and social justice activist. I'm based in Wales in the UK. I have a background in psychology and I talk a lot about the intersections of psychology, social justice, mental health and climate change. And I work as an educator for environmental justice and indigenous rights. And I'm also studying to become an environmental social scientist. So there's lots of things I'm interested in and there's lots of facets to who I am and what I do, some of which are very rooted in activism, some of which I safeguard from activism. I'm also an artist, a musician, and yeah, there's lots of things I do, and my main focus at the moment is doing research on climate change adaptation and ensuring fairness in the way we adapt to the impacts of climate change.
That's awesome. And what got you interested in activism? I mean, like, how did you become an activist? And what was that point where you realized that you had this connection and you wanted to use your individual power to join a collective or to start fighting to build a better world?
So I think I kind of organically grew into an activist. I grew up living in a very industrial town and in quite a poor area as well. So my family is from Poland and my parents moved to Germany for work. So growing up, we were very poor, but we would always go back to Poland during the holidays. So I kind of grew up with these two environmental extremes of beautiful mountains and intact nature in Poland, and then going back to this industrial environment in Germany. So I always had this awareness of the two extremes our society finds itself in, really. And then moving to London for my studies, I studied psychology in London. It was just, I was almost looking for something to get involved in. There was kind of a feeling of unease growing inside of me, and studying psychology, I felt like I wasn't using my skills and capabilities in at 100%. It's kind of hard to describe, but at some point I started hearing about Extinction Rebellion on the news, and I had a moment of almost, I don't know, a moment of this is it, this is what I have to do. And yeah, so it was kind of a growing awareness and just hearing about climate change on the news. And then when I found this activism group, which kind of aligned with my relatively radical views on the climate action we have to take, I basically just walked into their office and said, hey, this is me, these are my skills, what can I do for you? And from there, I've been pretty much a full-time activist.
Awesome. And which movements or organizations have you started or worked with during this time?
So I've been very heavily involved with Extinction Rebellion in London for about a year. And then with COVID, all activism was kind of, everyone kind of disbanded for a few months. And I was also suffering from very severe burnout at the start of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And during COVID and the first lockdown here in the UK, I worked a lot with HS2 Rebellion. HS2 is a very destructive train line that's currently being built in England. So I did a lot of work for that group and the people with HS2 Rebellion, they're still campaigning. They still live in camps, in protest camps, protecting the forest. And yeah, when I moved to Wales, I started doing more remote stuff because there's nothing here. Really, there's not many active activist groups where I live. So I started getting involved with more international work. So at the moment, I work mostly with XR Youth Solidarity, mm-hmm. With the education team. And our main focus is raising awareness of Indigenous rights and environmental racism and colonialism and conservation. Mm-hmm. And I'm also currently campaigning against some very worrying development which is happening in the UK, which is the new police and crime bill. So we've kind of been campaigning against that. And I was just part of an action yesterday with Pass the Mic, who are trying to raise more awareness of this bill, which is basically going to take away our ability to protest. And I'm also involved with a campaign called Climate Census, which is asking people to identify themselves as climate concerned in the upcoming census in England, Wales, and Northern Ireland.
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad you mentioned it because I would like to talk more about that. So let's talk a little bit more about this police and crimes bill in the UK. I mean, it's very shocking that, you know, they're trying to silence the voices of activists and their right to protest, right? I mean, it's a fundamental basic right for every human being to be able to protest peacefully and also raise their voice, and it's the basis of democracy. So let's talk a little bit more about that. I mean, where is this coming from and what is going on, and how can other activists join this fight for this to stop?
So basically, the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, it's a 300-page bill, and I read the summary, which you can find on the government website. And the wording is very vague, probably intentionally, but the key points are that basically all effective and disruptive forms of protest are going to be outlawed. And protest organizers and even people who just go and attend a protest, they risk very serious legal repercussions. And you can go to prison for organizing a protest that is disruptive under this bill. And the way they will define disruptive is pretty much down to Priti Patel, our Home Secretary. So it's very, very subjective. And basically, a protest has to be annoying to one person in order to count as disruptive. So this makes it very, very dangerous for activists to engage in any form of protest, really, because you can literally go to prison for it. So obviously this goes against anything that defines democracy, and we have to fight it. There's lots of very problematic aspects to this bill. It discriminates very heavily against Gypsy, Roma and Traveller communities as well. You can go to prison for 10 years for defacing a statue. So it's basically a descent into authoritarianism, really, yeah. Which has been happening for quite a while under the current Tory government here in the UK. So it's very, very scary times for activism, especially because the UK has committed to net zero by 2050, but we're not seeing the necessary steps being taken. So seeing that and also having the ability to protest taken away is a very scary thing, really. So we're asking people to email the House of Lords and members of the House of Lords. We ask them to email their MPs. And we've just released a digital toolkit, which people can find both on my page, on the Pass the Mic page, and other activists' pages. And basically we made this toolkit to make it easier for people to take action. And at the moment we're campaigning under the hashtag reject the bill. So people can just take a photo of themselves with a sign or take a photo with X arms and just ask the House of Lords to reject the bill. And as far as I know, it's going to go to the House of Lords sometime in May or June. So there's still time to fight this.
And well, talking about, you know, digital activism and doing this kind of, you know, rebellion through digital platforms, from your experience, I mean, what's the efficiency of signing petitions and joining, you know, through social media to ask world leaders and politicians to, you know, work upon change for the common good? Have you had any experience in which these types of initiatives, you know, move something in the right direction, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, so social media is very powerful in that it brings people from all across the world together in one place, especially since the COVID pandemic. The whole activism culture in the UK has become much more decentralized, which is a really, really good thing. Mm-hmm. Before COVID, I felt like most of UK activism was kind of centered in London, and it was really hard to, obviously there was stuff going on outside London, but as the political capital, a lot of stuff was going on in London. And now, because of the pandemic, we've been kind of forced to decentralize. And now you can participate in those big digital actions anywhere, from anywhere, which is really, really good. So I really hope that we can keep that to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And obviously signing petitions and doing digital actions, they're really, really important to put more pressure on politicians. And even now, having mobilized people to send emails to their MPs against the police and crime bill, we had lots of response from our MPs, and a lot of MPs showed a lot of interest in this, and a lot of MPs are going to fight the bill because they've seen that their constituents are against it, that they're interested in it, that they're passionate about it. So it's all about putting pressure on politicians. But digital action is not the only thing we should be doing. And as soon as it's safe to do so, people need to be able to go in the streets again. People need to be able to protest. It's a human right. So I believe that digital action and physical protest, those two together, they should be going hand in hand. But I do also believe that there should be more focus on digital action as well, as it's really accessible. A lot of people with disabilities or mental health issues, going to a protest is not safe and not accessible for them. So that's one thing we can really take away from this year of COVID, that digital action is really powerful and that it can have the same significance as a large-scale physical protest.
Yeah, and I think that's very important what you just said, because I think that there are many ways in which people can engage with activism, right? So there's not just like this one shape or, you know, form of activism. And I think that we need to start talking more about this and normalizing the fact that to be an activist, you don't necessarily have to be protesting, obviously, or being the front lines of the cause. And there are many ways in which people can start taking action, from digital actions to, you know, on the ground as well. So maybe, Jessica, from your perspective and the learnings you have had as an activist, what would you say to someone that cares about all these issues, but maybe they're not quite sure yet how to start taking action? And maybe they have this you know, idea that to become an activist, actually you have to go to the protest and, you know, follow certain stereotype of what being an activist means. So what would be some advice that you would give to someone out there that wants to start taking action, wants to become an activist, but they're not sure how to start or where to start?
So something I very often say to people is that you don't have to be a full-time activist. This doesn't have to be your whole life. And I keep reminding myself that not all I am is activism. Activism is not who I am as a person. And it's really, for activists, it's very important to safeguard yourself and to not get completely lost in this activist identity. But for people who don't want to do that full time, who don't want to dedicate their life to activism, I always say that activism starts with very little actions and things on a daily basis. Activism starts with sharing a post on Instagram. It starts with asking your employer to implement more sustainable policies. And that doesn't have to be in the environmental sector either. So it's it's those little bits of knowledge and things that we can implement in our daily life, no matter what our background is and no matter what our capacity is. There's always something very small we can do. And I think if we see it from this perspective and not, oh, we have to go to protests and we have to be involved in a lot of organizations, I think that can be very, very effective. There's this quote saying something along the lines of, we don't need a handful of people to be perfect activists. We need a lot of people to be imperfect activists, which is kind of adopted from the zero waste movement. But I think that's very true. We need a lot of people. We need mass action. But if a lot of people do very, very small actions on a mass scale, that can be very impactful and a lot more impactful than a small group of people dedicating their whole life to it.
Totally agree. And that takes me to the next question, Jessica. From your perspective, how do you think we can accelerate social and environmental change? I mean, you mentioned that we need more people in this movement and taking action. So what are some ways from your perspective that you think that we can accelerate that social and environmental change that the world so desperately needs?
So when we talk about social change, from an environmentalist perspective, it's really, really important that we make our activism intersectional, which means that we also have to focus on environmental racism, on racial justice in general, on gender justice, on disability justice, because many of the problems that marginalized groups and communities face, they're at the very root of the problem of climate change. So it's really, really important to focus on that. And we won't be able to make any considerable change in terms of climate change if we don't focus on those issues as well. For example, I'm an advocate for Indigenous rights, and a lot of my research focuses on Indigenous rights. And Indigenous people, for example, they protect 80% of biodiversity. So in Western countries, we often focus on technological solutions to climate change or individual behavior change, which is helpful. But compared to big corporations, I think it's 10 corporations who are responsible for the bulk of carbon emissions. It's not really that impactful to focus on that. And we should be focusing on Indigenous rights and social justice. If we if we tackle those root problems, we can do so much for the environment and our planet. So it's really, really important to focus on all the different facets of climate change, and not just climate change and how we can either mitigate the impact or adapt to it. If we only focus on mitigation, adaptation, and leave out social justice, we're not going to get very far. So it's very important that we as activists, or as non-activists, just as normal people, that we organize, that lots of people from different backgrounds organize, and that we bring all those people with who fight for those different causes together in the fight against climate change.
Yeah, totally. And I think, the word or concept of intersectionality has really been right in the conversations lately, and I'm really glad it has, because I think that for many years, people have focused on just one simple cause, right? And at the end, everything is connected. And we need to understand that connection between all the causes, between social justice and environmental justice, and especially those people in the front lines and the people that are being affected the most by all this crisis, right? And what you say is so important, because that needs to be the focus of activism and all policies, right? And all efforts, because if we don't protect the people that are at the center of this crisis, then none of the actions that we take are actually valuable to solve the issue, you know, at the very root of the cause, right?
Yeah, that's really important. I just remembered a very beautiful quote by, I believe it's Audre Lorde, and the quote goes, "There's no such thing as single issue activism. There's no single issue activism because we don't live single issue lives." Something along those lines. And I think that's very, very true. If we only focus on one single issue, such as climate change, and leave out everything that's connected to it, then we're just not going to get very far.
Totally. And well, Jessica, it's not a secret that many activists out there are facing burnout, right? They're working a lot on trying to solve these issues and hold politicians accountable. And when there's this setbacks, for example, like in the UK with the recent police and crime bill, well, it's almost not human to not feel frustrated about it, right? So how do you deal with this frustration? And also when it comes to that, what keeps you inspired or motivated to continue your work as an activist? And what would be some advice to other activists as well who maybe feel a little burned out or frustrated or need some motivation to keep going?
I think it's very, very important to safeguard yourself. And I had that experience myself of working insane hours during my time with XR, for example. I was studying my undergrad in psychology. I was working a part-time job because I lived in London, and I was doing activism on top of that. And I just ended up working 16 hours every day, which was not sustainable at all. And I ended up being burnt out, and I ended up being in bed for a month and not being able to do anything for 3 or 4 months. And I thought that that wouldn't happen to me. Like, I believe many activists think burnout's not going to happen to me. It is going to happen to you if you don't safeguard yourself, if you don't take breaks from activism and work. So that's really, really, really important. I've now implemented a rule of taking one day off a week, which I want to make 2 days in the future. And I think that's really important, just to spend time in nature, to recharge, to do things you enjoy that don't have anything to do with activism. For me, that's music or reading books or painting or taking photos. Just find something that recharges you that's not activism. And of course, you could always be doing more. And of course, the climate crisis won't wait for us. But we won't be able to fight the climate crisis in the long term if we don't look after ourselves. And what keeps me going is also not just taking breaks from activism, but the work I do as well. I think it's really important to find your niche in activism that you're really passionate about. For me, that's climate psychology. Finding out how climate change affects people psychologically, and also how we can motivate environmentally responsible behavior. On the other hand, that's also Indigenous rights, which I'm very passionate about. And mainly focusing on those two things I know quite a bit about and I'm very passionate about, that's what keeps me going. So it's really important to not just do what you feel like you should be doing, but also taking your interests and your skills and using that in your activism and building your activism around those skills and interests. And I think that makes it a lot easier to put a lot of hours into working as an activist.
Now that you mention like all these hours that you put into activism and that so many activists as well invest, you know, in raising awareness and doing that amazing work, let's talk a little bit about compensation, because I think it's also related to this burnout, right? There's so much work at a certain point that it's not being rewarded, right? And I know people and activists are not doing this to get paid or, you know, get recognized. But I do think, and I'm very passionate about this and trying to start these conversations around the fact that activists need to get paid. And HERO is just like, the mission is to build this platform for activists to get paid. And we're in the process on making that a reality. But what's your take on the fact that activists need to get paid for the work they're doing, and that activism is probably one of the most important jobs of our time? So from your perspective, how would you say that getting the right resources to individual activists and getting them paid for the work that they're doing could change activism and the whole game for good?
I think that's really, really important. And if activism was a paid job, I'm sure that many more people would be doing it. Our work responsibilities, they keep a lot of people engaging in activism because people are burnt out. We mm-hmm. work 40-hour working weeks, which is not healthy. We haven't evolved to work 40 hours a week. And yeah, it's actually, I've fantasized about this a lot. And I think if activism was a paid job, lots of people would be working as activists. And just imagine the kind of society we'd be living in if that was a reality. That would
That's
be a
the dream.
Yeah. And I think that would accelerate social change quite considerably. Yeah. From working in organizations, I know that paid activism or volunteer living expenses, they're very highly dependent on grants from organizations. Mm-hmm. Which are very few and far between. So it's kind of, you go into activism assuming that you're not going to get paid. If you do, that's an extra, but it's very unlikely. And most of the time, I have been an activist, it's been unpaid most of the time. So yeah, I think it's really, really important that activists get paid. I think it's very dangerous for activists to have to work on top of activism and other responsibilities. I don't think it's sustainable, and it restricts the impact we could have. Many activists still have to participate in the capitalist system. They have long working hours in order to be able to pay the bills, and participating in activism on top of that is really bad for our mental health, and it's really bad for activism in the long term. Because people are just not able to do in the long term without serious health issues or mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, getting paid as activists in order to decrease the workload, I think that will be really crucial in the future, because I do keep seeing the same people in many different groups and in many different campaigns. And I'm aware that a lot of activists, they're doing lots of work. And yeah, it's just not sustainable, and we need to change that. Also, in order to diversify activism as a culture, I think if activism was paid, a lot of people who are not in the position to participate in activism, for whom activism is not accessible, that would make activism more accessible to them. And I believe that would make lots of activist groups more diverse as well.
Totally. And yeah, I truly believe that this is possible. I mean, it's not easy. It's not going to be easy. But I do think, and I'm very optimistic about it. And yeah, it's my life mission to make this happen, because I truly believe that we're in a time where just doing activism out of a sense of responsibility and altruism is not gonna, it's not going to make what needs to be done happen, right? I think we have a very small time frame to make radical changes. And as you said, we need more people involved in activism. And I do believe that many people want to engage in activism, but as you said, they cannot afford doing it, or they cannot afford having a job and then doing activism. So I think that when we bring the right resources to activists individually, I think we're going to see a lot of people getting engaged. And as you said, also a lot of different people. I mean, I'm very excited to think of an activism movement where more creatives are able to join, where scientists, where lawyers, I mean, like from any other industry, that they can start connecting their passions with activism. So yeah, I think this is the dream, right? Where everyone really gets to connect with their activism and that sense of responsibility, but also that we get people rewarded for their time and efforts. Because I think the time where people were asked to do this out of a sense of responsibility, I mean, that's done. I mean, I think we need to start normalizing and moving towards an economy for the common good, right? And find a system and create that system, economic system, that works for everybody and that compensates activists for the work that they do. So I think that, yes, this is going to be a game changer. And I think that if Hero and all activists out there work together to make this a reality, I think that we can really, raise the bar for activism and change the game for good.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. Especially coming from a science background, I'm very aware that science and environmental science is not political enough and not radical enough. Mm-hmm. So bringing activism into different environments and different occupations, I believe, is very important. I'm aware that a lot of scientists and researchers, they just don't have the capacity to engage in activism on top of teaching, researching, everything else they do. So that's also one thing I'm advocating for, is to decolonize research and knowledge as well. It's really important that we bring the insights we gain through activism, through work with Indigenous communities and people from all across the world, that we bring that into our knowledge systems and science in Western countries. So it's really important that we use those international connections we have in our activist circles and implement that in society.
Totally. Now, Jessica, just to close, I wanted to ask you, for you, what does it mean to be a hero?
To me, being a hero means to educate and amplify. And I think those two, they go hand in hand, and they need equal representation in activism.
Totally agree. Now, Jessica, thank you so much for taking the time to join the Hero Podcast, for everything that you have shared. I mean, it's such valuable information and insight for other activists and people that want to join this fight. And also thank you for the amazing work you're doing to amplify the voices of other activists and people in the front lines of this crisis, and also for just doing the work, right? And I hope that more people feel inspired to do that kind of work because of the work that you're doing. So thank you so much for setting the example and for everything that you do to build a better world for all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of our Hero Podcast. Remember to subscribe and to follow us on Instagram and Twitter as Hero Activism. See you next time.